As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is The Athletic's dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portzine with you on a Wednesday afternoon. Allison Lucan is here.
Hello.
Hello, Allison. The Blue Jackets are, it's been four games since we spoke to you last. They're 1-2-1. They are hosting the home opener on Thursday against their friends, the Tampa Bay Lightning, Stanley Cup winning Tampa Bay Lightning. Allison, they're 1-2-1, and nobody's happy. And nobody should be happy. What have these games been like for you to watch? We sometimes see different things with the games. It's been a frustrating start because it looks like I call it cough medicine hockey, where it's you know that feeling when you're just kind of in a haze trying to get through the day and you don't feel well? That's what the large portion of a lot of these games have looked like to me in the early going. Your thoughts, please.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think up until game four, ironically, it was, first just kind of like, is anything going to happen? And then when you saw that the team was not able to muster much of an offensive push, and I'm speaking specifically about game three, then you start to say, well, where's the push? where's the drive? Where's the fire? So, at first I was willing to say we're not there, but then again, I'm not at every road game. I mean, you are, but I am not. And missing some of the energy, missing some of the urgency for me personally. And in a shortened season, every game matters more, whether everyone likes it or not. And so that's something I'm definitely watching right now.
Yeah. Wrote about it today. Seth Jones, Zach Werenski, Cam Atkinson, all zeros. Some big minuses for what that's worth. Not a lot, but they've not scored. Max Domi, there I go again. Max Domi, 1 point. Nick Foligno, 1 point. Pierre-Luc Dubois, 1 point. It goes without saying, if these guys are playing well, if the Blue Jackets are playing well, there's a question of, do they have enough offensive firepower? When those guys aren't going, I just named six guys, and they're really not going. They've had moments, each of them, I guess. Some of them haven't even really had moments. They got no chance, right? I mean, the margin for error becomes a gap to success. They just can't sustain it like that.
100%. And I think this goes back to that fight what we're looking for. You just don't see it. I mean, to me, Alexander Texier is perhaps the most fired up player on the ice right now that I see. And, you know, the silver lining, I will say this, at least for Seth Jones and Zach Werenski, the two of them in 5-on-5 play, they are firing the puck at the net more than any other Blue Jacket player.
Yeah.
They are getting more unblocked shot attempts through than any other player. So that gives me optimism that's an issue of the pucks need to fall. That's a very common thing that I'll allow a little faith for. Mm-hmm. But the rest of it, it's definitely concerning.
Yeah. And the problems, I'm not really reading into the power play yet. It's 0-for-6. That's not good. I'm not even really on the power play just yet, although it hasn't been good enough. But the problems that have pervaded the power play through the years, we've talked about this sort of, it's almost this adherence to a textbook plan rather than a passion. It's almost like an instruction booklet rather than an art form when they have the puck. It feels methodical, right? Not inventive. And that, to me, is exactly what's going on all over their game now, even 5-on-5. There's just no jam there. There's no, I don't see a joy about their game. What is the, do you see a direction that they're trying to take that they're not able to pull off? Do you see do you see what they're trying to do, I guess is the way to say it?
It's a great question. I like the way you described it. It's that lack of joy is what I was describing before of like, there's a plodding to it, a PLODDING, plodding. To what I feel like we've seen and what excites me, what energizes me. And at this point, like really we can't pile on the power play because it is what it's been. I'm almost in the space where if it improves, I'll be surprised. But we've seen some flashes from Max Domi there. Mm-hmm. We've seen some beautiful cross crease passes. We've seen a little bit of that, even strength too. Part of me wants to say, and again, I'm not in the room. Who am I to say? John Tortorella would probably crawl through the internet if he listened to this and smack me. But take the handcuffs off, Max. Play. Do that.
Yeah.
Feel free. You use your creativity. You see glimpses of that. You saw a really nice setup with some hold in the offensive zone last game. And then they score, the Blue Jackets. Mm-hmm. So it's the letting go. When they seem to find success, you're seeing flashes of it. But yes, I don't see it. It's what I said. Other than the start to game four, I don't know that this team knows which way they're going. And don't even get me started on the 18 million reasons that could be. Yeah. I don't think it's as simple as to say it's one thing.
Yeah, but let's talk about two possibilities because I've got some thoughts here. The second one I'll get to is the elephant in the room that everybody wants to talk about. I think it's an impossible thing to read right now, but we'll get to that in a second. The first one for me is I feel like there's been so much talk about loosening these guys up to play offensively. And now you've put these players in the position where you're saying all of your offensive struggles from last year have now been wrapped up in a tidy little bow. That we played conservatively. In other words, we played with the restrictor plate on our engines last year because we didn't want to take chances because they had to make things clean for the goalies. All of that made sense. Now, though, this time we mean it. Or mm-hmm. Now you guys have the freedom to go. And I think you sort of have already seen an evolution in the first couple of games here. From the first couple of games where I thought they tried to play that way at the start with Nashville. And what happened is, holy Lord, the puck going the other way was a real issue. And they gave up some goals. Off, I think, seven. Well, they had 8 goals in those 2 games. One was an empty netter. But of the other 7, 5 were scored either off the rush or in transition or odd man rushes. Mm-hmm. You get a little nervous that way if you keep getting bit the same way, you tend to go in a shell a little bit. I think what we've seen in Detroit is the shell a little bit,
yeah.
where
yeah, yeah.
there's just isn't they sort of became conditioned in Nashville that every time they try to sort of stretch their legs and speak out, oh God, here it goes the other direction. So this team has been known to overthink. I may myself be overthinking things right now, but what do you think about that idea? They're being told to be free of mind. Sometimes that's the hardest way to be free of mind. I just don't see it taking effect with them as they intended.
Yeah, I agree with that last part of not taking effect as they intended. And I'm struggling as we talk through this, what I think the answer is, because I don't want to place burden on any one side, but my initial reaction leans toward wanting to challenge the players to release whatever's happening, because we've heard this from the group, and I get it. I actually support it, that the group was a little bit hampered by having to play so defensively responsibly last year. They wanted to be free. So why not let it go? I almost wonder now, too, as I talk through this, like I said, real time, if it's not necessarily as much the style of play, but it's the sense of urgency. It's the lack of feeling like they're ready. And that's not a judgment on the coaching staff mm-hmm. or the organization, but a shorter training camp, you didn't have a ramp up with exhibition games. And so now here are these games and everyone knows they matter and no one wants to start off behind. And maybe that perhaps is what's impacting this more than anything. But if it were me, I would like to have a conversation with these players, open to hearing what they have to say, but is this not what you wanted? And is something going on there that maybe needs to be pushed through? Because I certainly don't see that the coaches enforcing, like, you must think offensively. That seems counterintuitive to me.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I mean, that should let you loose in your
yes.
in your game. It's not Katie bar the door. It's never going to be that, but there's a little bit more understanding, or there's a little more leeway for offensive risk this year. That should be music to their ears, which brings me back to, I guess, you know, another sort of element within that first part is, can this team do it? Is it the restrictor plate or is it the engine? Is that why the struggle is there? Are they just not able to, even them loosening up and playing may not be enough for them to score, and this team to score enough in the NHL? We've talked about this. For me, my issue is this. Does this team have enough offense right now? Not from what we've seen. I'm not arguing this. On the roster, is there enough for them to be competitive offensively in the regular season? I think there is. My question is, what happens when you get to the postseason? On the whole, this has been my issue. Right now, they got big problems. I think they need so much more to be offensively capable in the postseason. But I think as they're presently constructed, there's no reason this team shouldn't be able to be effective and successful in the regular season. That's just my feeling. I also look at it this way. You have 0 points from Jones, Werenski, Atkinson. You have minimal contributions from other significant players on this team. the fact that you're losing and those things are in place, that correlates. Like, the bigger concern for me would be if those guys were playing well and you still weren't winning. So if you look at the situation now, do I think Seth Jones and Zach Werenski are going to get going and are going to start getting rewarded? They're going to start playing better, A, and within that get rewarded with points. I do. History tells me that is a reasonable expectation. Do I think Cam Atkinson is going to start playing better and through that better play is going to be rewarded with points and goals and good games? I do. I still believe that. I think history is my guide there as well. So the question for me so right now is just, how do they get out of this deep, frigid funk? Because I do think this roster is still good enough to be a capable regular season team for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, and it's funny, and I'm, again, I hesitate saying these things because I'm certainly not picking on coach or player, but we think of hearing Torts saying he's a student of the mind. And I look at the first game against Detroit, you know, just coming out soft, coming out without energy.
Yep.
Bjorkstrand gets the team on the board and bang, bang, two more goals. And it was almost like it was unlocked.
Yes.
The minute they saw one guy score, you know, and then game four, they go down. And then, you know, it's, oh my gosh, are they even going to be able to tie it up?
Right.
I don't know if they're so wound up in, and I know you said we're going to get to this, are they so wound up in trying to prove something, whatever it is,
yeah.
Prove something to Pierre-Luc Dubois, prove something to the league, prove something to who knows who or who knows what, it's like we talked about last year, until the injury said, get out of your head because you just have to go out there and do something.
Yeah.
They're too locked up mentally, it seems.
Yeah. And this is an argument to me for lineup changes on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
That it screams that to me. If I'm coach of the team, Kirby goes in.
Mm-hmm.
I need that. I need something I can hang my hat on. I have to know there's going to be energy in this game. And so I think it's reached that point. They haven't really tweaked with the lineup at all in the early going. The one thing I loved about Texier's goal, and I will belabor this point, I'm not even going to apologize for it because I no longer bitch to you about it in the press box, Allison. I sit here alone in my study and do it. He got the puck and he shot the puck in one fluid move. Bang. Puck, mm-hmm. Shot. I came out of my chair the other night with Oliver Bjorkstrand. I'm never going to tell Oliver Bjorkstrand how to shoot. Because the man has a great shot. He dusted the damn thing off twice and fired it into the goalie. And I've seen that probably in the four games, probably 6 to 8 times now. Great scoring chances that die on the stick of the shooter because they take that half second or a full second to line it up, to measure, and to shoot, and it blows each time. Texier from damn near the blue line just snapped it on net. And there was a half second there where Bernier had to respond. Oh, this is a shot, and it worked out perfectly. It wasn't a strategic play. Oh, I know Foodie's going to be there. It works, and it has to be done more to keep people off balance and be less predictable than it is right now. It's just so predictable right now. Elephant in the room time.
Yes. Can I say something about Texier, though, first?
Yes, please.
So I agree, and I agree with your point about creating chaos and unpredictability. Seth Jones is the one who makes me just shoot the puck, man. But I actually point to Texier's goal in the first game,
okay,
where he just says, screw it, and just carries that thing in and tries a wraparound attempt. I mean, the ball's on that guy, yeah, on that play.
Right.
That is the element that for me is also missing to add on to your point, to which I also fully co-sign.
You know what, Bemstrom, to his credit too, because we've talked about his struggles with the shot that was supposed to be his forte last year. Domi, you mentioned the cross zone pass that Domi made on the power play, great pass. And you know what, Bemstrom put good wood on it, and it was a good one timer. He keeps doing that, he's going to be rewarded, if not beating, yes, the goalie clean, there are going to be rebounds in as a result of that. I like that shot. Someone else, it might have been Domi, unleashed a shot out of that was the unpredictable shot save. That is their luck right now. But it's just not a dangerous, reckless enough offensive team for my liking. Elephant in the room. And
let's go.
I don't know that we're gonna there won't be an answer to this. There really can't be an answer to this, but I think it's foolish to not think that the situation with Pierre-Luc Dubois is having some effect on this team right now. And Pierre-Luc Dubois has just been okay for me on the ice. Is that fair?
Yes, I agree.
I'm not gonna not ask him the question because it might make him uncomfortable. So I asked him, "Are you able to play your game in this situation?" And he gave the stock answer. You could almost see him flip through the Rolodex. What did we say I was going to say about this? I have one job, and it's to play hockey and help the team. I just have to go out there and help the guys and try to get 2 points every night. Like I said, it's a short season, so every game matters even more. I just have one job, and it's to help this team win. And so I reiterated, are you able to do that? In other words, there's a lot of noise about this young man, only some of it in Columbus, Ohio. There's talk all over the league about this kid. He's the number one center. Are you able to do that? I don't know that he is. I don't sense him playing free, and I wonder what's going on in the dressing room such that it is in these COVID days because of that story. And I know a lot of people from the outside think that this is a media person's dream, that we love to fan the flames with this sort of stuff. That's fine. Go with it if you will. I think it's naive to think that when your number one center, one of the best players in the room, asked to be traded, in essence says, I don't want to be here any longer. That's not going to be received well in the room. At minimum, that's going to be disruptive in the room. What do we know? What can we tell about the way they're playing? And do we have any reason to think that this is or not affecting their play, 5-on-5, power play, what have you?
Yeah, I mean, I come at this at a little different angle. Let's talk about the player on the ice first.
Yep.
He hasn't blown the doors off, no. But I also don't think he's dogging it. And, you know, this is a player who, again, I've said this repeatedly, the problem is now we have seen him at what currently is close to his ceiling, which is what we saw in the postseason last year, which was exceptional. And to see that, now everything is compared against that. Right. But this isn't super far off the mark of what we've seen in the past. This is a player that ebbs and flows like so many. And we are not in the room. And we've talked about this before, but, you know, again, all for safety, but we are not able to get a vibe walking around the players. We aren't able to just chat with guys casually and get a read on how they might be feeling or what the energy is. So we're going off of Zoom calls. And at the end of the day, if Pierre-Luc Dubois wants to answer your questions like he did, that's his right.
Totally.
My concern is, and we've written on this, you and I did a piece on why conflict helps this team two summers ago at the time as a flat circle. But Pierre-Luc Dubois can give the stock answers to media. That's his right. Mm-hmm. I am of the opinion that for the team to be at its optimal functionality, he owes his teammates more. They don't need to agree. They don't need to like it. He doesn't need to enjoy telling them. But it is that bedrock of honesty and knowing the reality of where everyone is coming from that allows everything to grow from there for a successful team. And I've harped on this before. This is all about the five dysfunctions of a team. If Pierre-Luc Dubois is answering questions inside the room as he is to us, I think that is a disservice to his team. And we don't need to know that. But I think in terms of what happens in the room, it's a disservice to his team and to everyone being the best they can be if he cannot be honest with them, because everything about that group being successful is going to be hampered if he cannot be honest, even to a degree, even if it's only 20 or 40% of the truth. It's going to hamper their ability to be at their optimum performance. And that's what this group needs to be successful for all the reasons we already talked about as far as production.
Yeah. And I think the reason articulated with the players, when it is articulated as of a week ago, according to John Tortorella on his radio show, it had not been articulated to the group.
Right.
Why?
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm not sure if that is still the case or if I believe that it was the case, to be honest with you. But if the reason ever articulated to the players is a reason that can be sort of played alongside, mm-hmm. then it can work. If it's, I don't like my teammates, then that's a zero. We have no reason to believe that. If I don't like the city, well, suck it up, kid. You can still play like that. That's something you could play alongside. But the concern here is the way this team is built. This is a team that has, when it's played its best, has been greater than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have that, if they don't have the all together now stuff, then this could be a really long season, because they are. It's hard for them to win when they're not together as the sum of their parts. That's just the way this team is constructed, which kind of gets back to our original point. They have to be firing to be successful. The other thing is, this is a heavy question, Allison, but if you're Jarmo Kekalainen and you deem that the situation is untenable, something's got to be done, or the season is going to be sacrificed, do you make a less than optimal trade here to restore peace in the dressing room and attempt to save the season? Or do you sacrifice this season to get the best deal you can get, knowing that it could be John Tortorella's last season in Columbus? Could be. It could be David Savard's last year in Columbus. It could be Nick Foligno's last year in Columbus.
Yeah. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I think as I said before, and it's Patrick Lencioni, I should cite for those five dysfunctions of a team, I highly recommend the book to anyone. His priority should be to fix the team, because whether Pierre-Luc Dubois stays or goes, those principles need to be in place.
Yeah.
The trick of where he is at right now, this being Jarmo Kekalainen, is that you don't want the player's value to decline as related to a perceived performance within the team or the player. It's so hard. It's so hard. I think that the thing is that this question is going to be more relevant probably in 10 games, because if you fall way behind with this schedule and this number of games, catching up is almost insurmountable.
Yeah.
And that's when you really have to ask, well, if this current season is already lost, do we go all in? And this goes back, this harkens back to other conversations, and now I'm really unpacking a bunch of messes. But if you're not going to be good, if you're not going to make the playoffs, right, this team has perpetually not intentionally taken moves to put them in the best draft position possible if playoffs weren't an option.
Nice way to say it.
And so I'm trying. And so if this is the year, why not try for that? That's something he has to consider.
Yes, he does. And I've heard a lot of people wonder, Pierre-Luc Dubois to Montreal, where would he like to be traded? And that's when I tap the brakes a little bit and go, okay, listen, the kid has the right to say I'd like to be traded. That's just
right.
A human.
But who cares? Exactly. It's,
yeah, that right. I mean, I don't want to be here is anyone's right, and any adult right to determine.
Right.
But the Blue Jackets are under like less than zero obligation
right.
to figure out where he wants to go and make the trade. He has no control over the trade. he's a player fresh out of his entry level deal. There's no trade. There's no move in there. So right. This is not a where do you want to go. This is do I get the best offer? Allison, it's very interesting to me. It's reckless to jump to conclusions in our chairs. It's also a mistake to be naive about these things. I think there's a reason Alexander Texier is playing and playing so much at center ice. And this team has to prepare. I think it changes the trade market significantly if you have to get a centerman back for Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to get a centerman back for Pierre-Luc Dubois, it almost makes an in-season trade impossible because there's just a ton of different variables on that. If you can take a winger back and you don't have to have a top six center, in other words, if Alexander Texier is ready to be that, then that opens up all kinds of possibilities on the trade market that don't exist if you have to get a centerman back. So I refuse every time I see Alexander Texier play and I think about him playing center, that's where my mind goes, that this is very much an evaluation process for young Mr. Texier. Thoughts?
I'm a little less cynical than you. I think that this team has shown flexibility. I think if Pierre-Luc Dubois goes, they're cashing in on the season.
Yeah.
To be honest. And if that is the context, they have Texier, they have Jenner, they even have Foligno in a pinch. Koivu will be coming back, we hope, in good health. So they can cobble together something. I think that if this trade is made, unless it's a comparable to a Jones-Johansson trade, and I don't know that it will be, I don't know that you see a center-for-center trade at this level of talent. I think this is a cobbling together the rest of the season, but there is enough talent on this roster to do just that.
Yeah. One last thing I want to pick your brain about. We've talked about it for 4 years here. How long do Seth Jones and Zach Werenski play together? Now, it was interesting to me after the game in Detroit, Tortorella split up Jones and Werenski for long stretches of that game, had them back together towards the end. And after the game, he mentioned, Tortorella did, that they have talked as coaches about doing that this season, about, quote, putting Savard with a skater. That was interesting to me. So I asked John Tortorella about it the next day.
It went great.
It was not interesting to him, we could say that. I asked to speak to Brad Shaw, who's really eloquent, loquacious, and would use those words, eloquent and loquacious, and declined to comment. Something's up with them mixing the pairings. Allison, your thoughts. What are we looking at there?
Yeah, it's interesting to me because I, prior to this year, had never had a problem with them together or apart. And that honestly was due to the presence of Ryan Murray, who, when healthy, ranked out pretty close to the two of them as a top tier defenseman. To me, when I really think about this, I don't wonder if this is more about what happens in that third pair and thus the overall makeup of this defense. We've seen Jones and Werenski as this rover pair, Gavrikov and Savard as this staunch defensive pair. And this third pairing has always kind of been effective in different ways, but seeking an identity. And I think when you have a Delzato, a Peak, and a Kukin, with all due respect to Scott Harrington, but primarily those three, you can start to think about your defense differently. And maybe there isn't a shutdown pair anymore, but there is value to making each pair have a little bit more shutdown-ness, if that's a term. Mm-hmm. So that's how I think about it. I think it might be more about remaking this defense when you look at what's pushing from the back, because that third pair doesn't
work with those pieces, but overall restructuring makes the whole thing hum a little bit better.
That's interesting because I asked the question, I think it was the first year they put Werenski and Jones together, like these are two really gifted offensive defensemen or should be in different ways. These are defensemen that should be involved in the offensive play, I think is the best way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder if Werenski's offensive inclination limits Jones's.
I do think so, yes.
They can't both be that way on the ice. They can't both play that way.
Yes.
You wonder if you split them up, if you put, you know, Savard with Werenski, you put Gavrikov with Jones, then it's pretty clear which player on that pair has the green light to engage offensively. And I'm not sure Jones can feel perfectly comfortable doing that with because you don't want to limit Werenski in that regard. So splitting them up has always, it's nothing to do with not thinking they're a great pair. They're a fantastic pair. But it's about getting this having Seth Jones or Zach Werenski on the ice for 48 to 50 minutes of the game is really enticing to me if I'm them. And so what I wanted to get from Tortorella, and he was not interested in having this conversation, is are you doing that in instances where you're not happy with the way things are going? Or is that a trick you can keep in your back pocket as a coach to spice things up at certain parts of the games, as we've seen, like the Penguins put Malkin and Crosby on the same line, three or four shifts a game, just as a little extra juice. How are you looking at that? Is it a response to needed improvement, or is it a wrinkle even in good times that you might try? Haven't quite gotten an answer for that, but I know that this is something they've discussed. Savard talked about them having this discussion before the season started as well, that it was something they wanted to do this year. So
yeah,
something to keep your eye on, and we may see it more often. Allison, anything else to get to?
I think that's it. Games are coming fast and furious. There's not much time for much else.
I know, right? Thursday against the Lightning. Saturday's game against the Lightning has been moved from 7 p.m. to 2. Did we already talk about this? So that the game can be aired also for our friends in Europe. So
perfect.
Prime time in Europe. One would think per rotation that could be a Merzlikens start, in which case Latvia, what up? Latvia will be up in prime time for that one. You know that. All right. Well, Allison, thanks as always for your time. Folks, thanks for listening. Much appreciation to producer Danielle and David Cook for that great music. We will be back with you all next Wednesday. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you all soon. Take care.